Welcome to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast, where women with ADHD finally feel seen, understood, and unapologetically themselves. If you have ever felt like you're too much and not enough all at the same time, you're in the right place because that's the alchemy, learning how both come together to make something priceless. I'm Jessica Covington, holistic ADHD coach and fellow fancy brain, and I'm really glad you're here. Let's get into it. Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. Guess what? It's more than a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. I built it for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and finally in control. Inside the program, whether it's group or private, you'll finally drop the mask and start thriving. Together, we'll quiet the relentless inner critic, allow your nervous system to relax into regulation, and you'll start leading your life with intention by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. This is where your too much becomes your magic and where real lasting change begins on day one. If that speaks to you, learn more at fitology.com, and that link, of course, will be in the show notes. I am so excited to have with us today Jeanette Smith. Jeanette is a freelance editor, an award-winning self-editing instructor, a creative writer, and a mermaid, a subject on which she literally wrote the book. She's always taken her own path in life, following her passions and sharing them with others. And I'm super excited she's here to share them with us today. So Jeanette, thanks for being here.
Yeah, so exciting.
Now, you've known for some time that you had a different way of thinking, but the particular difference hasn't always been really clear. Can you share a bit about that and what it was like in childhood leading up to now?
Absolutely. So when I was a kid, fairly early in life, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and it was definitely a struggle to get properly medicated and, feel different. And then in high school, there was a depression diagnosis that was added to that. And then in college, it kind of morphed into, oh, you're bipolar. So the clearness of my symptoms my thinking, my thought process has never been clear, because it's always never quite fit. You know, the diagnosis never quite, it's like, okay, I kind of fit that. That makes the most sense. But you never could pin it down, really. And that was really a struggle.
Mm-hmm. That's such a common story in this world, the idea that we get multiple diagnoses. People, even experts, sometimes aren't quite sure if they're overlapping and they all co-occur together, or if the first one was wrong and the second one is right, or maybe the first two were wrong and the third one is right. It's really hard to be so misunderstood by others and to struggle even to understand ourselves. I think it's probably one of the most frustrating things that we deal with. What has been your experience of other people making false assumptions or maybe misreading your intent based on just the idea that you think differently?
Yeah, I think this happens not infrequently to me, but one of the places where I kind of experience this is online, because I post things, you know, about my business. I post things about editing. I post things about mental health and my life. And sometimes the way I describe something doesn't ring with people. And I get comments that like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I meant. And we don't end up having a difference of thought process. I just didn't explain it in a way that they understood. So that's a big space where that happens to me a lot, which is just kind of the nature of being written instead of being like face to face or spoken. The people who I generally hang out with, I'm very vocal about the fact that, like, hey guys, this is how my brain works, and you need to make some decisions because I will not make decisions for the group. And, you know, just little things that, like, I'm very open with people about. And so I think that's the best way, because if, you know, they're my friends, they should know about me so we can interact properly. So I think just being open with people has stopped a lot of those miscommunications as well.
Mm-hmm. There's so much there in what you just said. I guess I want to start from the end and the idea that when we finally can drop the mask and just be who we really are and ask our friends to understand, hey, this is how I'm thinking, this is what I'm great at, this is what I need your help with. What a relief. I mean, that's an amazing gift that you can give to yourself, but also to your friends. Have you, I'm assuming you have, since they've stuck with you, have you found people respond in a positive way when you're really honest about how your brain works?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's just a matter of, again, not being defensive about it, just being open as a conversation. Hey, it's like, hey guys, my favorite color is orange. Hey guys, I get nervous with public speaking. It's just another fact about me in the end. And I think it's also equally important for people that you are maybe romantic with. I took a long time to find the right partner because different partners would react to my emotional troubles as in inappropriate ways now that I know. And it just took a while to find the person who I could just say outright, this is what I'm going through, this is what I'm feeling, this is how my brain is working. And they just sit there, they listen, and they're like, you know what? We'll work through this. I got you. Do you want advice? Do you want a hug? So it's when you find someone like that, right? Hold on to those people for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And backing up to something that you were talking about earlier about being misunderstood in writing, that must be a special challenge and probably also a strength for you as someone who is a writer and helps other people make their communication clear in writing. How has your different thinking style and having been misperceived so often shaped the way that you write and the way you help other people write?
Definitely helped shape it. And I think it comes down to kind of the idea of the difference between advice and feedback. I think when it comes to a specifically writing, but mostly any part of our life, we tend to get a lot of advice. And to me, advice is not specific. It's the general thing that will apply to the majority of people, but you probably already know you're not the majority of people. And so what you really need is feedback. And feedback to me is when someone listens to you and gives you constructive ideas in return. I think what I try and provide as part of my edits, as part of my book coaching, is that feedback aspect where we're not talking in generalities, we're talking about you. And again, when you really concentrate on that person wholly, you get a different level of relationship with them, which helps in the edit because the more you know about them, the more you can bring their voice out of the words and understand their meaning and help them get that clarity that we also often lack sometimes in communication. And I think again, that's where editing comes in, is we have to maybe think about it a second time, go over it once or twice. That's not, that's something I think everyone does. So I hope everyone does. But yeah, so I think we need more personalization when it comes to people understanding our process for communication, because you can't just go by the best advice. You need feedback.
That I think is a solid concept no matter what we're talking about. Work with the individual in front of you. Don't assume that they are just like everybody else of any description, tall or short or old or young or anything. That's beautiful. What have you found to be the the strengths that show through for you with ADHD?
Oh gosh. I think there's quite a few. I would definitely say some of the hyperfixivity that you can get from it. It doesn't happen with everything, but I found that there's certain things, like when I'm playing around on Canva, I just get lost for a few hours and it's just fun, it's easy work. And I've really tried to incorporate that into the rest of my life by really concentrating on my niche. What is happiness to me, what would be a happy project for me to do. So it's really, forced me to think about how to bring that joy into all sports of my life, areas of my life, when I look at what strengths I'm using when I'm having that hyperfixative moment. So I love that that works for me. I think also I don't know if this is really an ADHD thing, but like I think there's a bit of determination that comes from things, right? Like you're just you it's not quite as far as spite, but you're just like, I'll show them, you have that confidence and that drive to just like, we're gonna do this. And sometimes you get distracted along the way, but you always tend to come back to that drive at some point, to get yourself to that goal.
Yeah, I love that. I agree with you. I think determination is one of the great big strengths that builds up as a result of ADHD, because very often we get knocked down a lot and we have a choice to either get back up again and give it another go or to stay down. And luckily, most of us get back up and try it again. As a small business owner, what do you find the most challenging about the way that your mind works?
One of the things that I find most challenging is sometimes communicating with people, and that is because I get up at 4:30 in the morning, and so I am ready sitting at my computer with my cup of tea to start sending emails at 5 a.m. And I realize that not everyone is awake at 5 a.m., especially because I'm in Central Time and people on the West Coast or elsewhere. So I have a little disclaimer in my email signature that says, "Mental health note: I am sending this email at a time that works best for me. Please feel no need to respond until a time that works best for you." And I think just having, again, that clarity, letting them know that, like, hey, I am sending an email at 5 a.m. I do not expect you to send an email at 5 a.m. Like this, we gotta make that clear. And so things like that, definitely in the business are a little bit of a struggle, because I do have a habit of, and I do that because there's no notifications in the morning, right? Like I'm not getting emails, I'm not getting LinkedIn notifications, I'm not seeing a bunch of people in Discord and stuff. It's like completely quiet. There's no cars going by outside. It just feels like time I can focus. And so I just protect that time as much as I can.
That's so wise. And I noticed that in your emails to me. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, this is like a sigh of relief. How nice for someone to include the idea that I don't have to get back to them right away if they've, emailed what for many people would have been overnight.
Yeah. And I think especially in work emails, we definitely maybe misunderstand people's intent sometimes. If someone is more blunt, it doesn't necessarily mean they need the answer right away, but maybe they do, and we misread those cues. So I just try and make it as clear as possible that if I need you to respond, I will say please respond as soon as possible. But other than that, it's when you can get to it. So
Exactly. And what a beautiful way you found to work around that challenge. Something that gives grace to you and to the other people involved.
yeah, it's just spreading that understanding.
So important. So I'd love to talk now a little bit about some of the advice in your book. And first, tell us about the book, if you would, and then are there any ideas in the book that you could extrapolate into lessons that might translate for a person who is differently wired?
Absolutely. So I wrote a book called Modern Mer, which stands for mermaid or merman or merperson. And it is a recreational guidebook to the sport of mermaiding. So it features interviews from 18 different mers from around the world, and it's coupled with research and advice. So there's tons of advice in it, but I think the main lesson that you could take from the book is just the idea of whimsy. I think I think we, a lot of our brains tend toward the fantastical, tend toward the, high thinking, the daydreaming and stuff like that. And if you daydream of anything like freedom of expression or, freedom of movement, anything like that, mermaiding gives you a chance to experience those things. You are basically cosplaying as a mermaid if you want. You can get into wigs and makeup and accessories and mersonas and, or you can just do it for the sport. You can get into the breath holding techniques, you can get into the fluid motions and the body movement that it would take. So there's so many reasons you could get into it. And I would also say it is for everyone. One of the mermaids that I interviewed, she actually mentioned to me that she had just done an 80th birthday party for someone as mermaid. Like she brought mermaid tails for them all to try, and it was someone's 80th birthday. So I mean, it's never too late to chase the whimsy, to follow your dreams, to the cosplay, the Renaissance fair, wherever you want to go. I think that's one of the main lessons of the book is just find who you are, be brave, show it.
Yeah. Oh, that is really great life advice for anybody, I think. Fantastic. And so as we wrap up here, I want to be sure that people know and understand what it is that you do as a writer and editor when you're not being a mermaid. Can you talk a
Yes.
little bit about that?
Sure. So I am a copy editor and a line editor, which means I take care of wording, flow, all the way down to grammar, punctuation. I do this for novels. I do it for nonfiction books. I do it for corporate communications. I'm a big believer that if it's a piece of writing and it needs copy editing, the rules are pretty much the same. There's a few differences to know, but other than that, I love copy editing everything because, again, the ADHD bit, I just need to have the variety. I can't be copy editing the same genre every time. It just gets so. So I do a variety of copy editing and line editing skills. I also teach self-editing. So if you are on a journey of writing something that you want to publish and you're not sure what you need to do to it to make it the best it can be, I generally have some services that work for that purpose as well, to try and get people who dream of publication there because it is possible. And I think people just need the right direction.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Thank you. Would you share any links or how folks might get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your book or your work?
Absolutely. So, one of the best ways to find me is JeanetteTheWriter.com. That's my website. It's JeanetteTheWriter. And you can also find me on Instagram as at modern_mer. And then I'm also very active on LinkedIn, where you can find me just under Jeanette Smith, which is my plain Jane name.
Fantastic. And of course, we'll put all that in the show notes as well. Jeanette, thank you so much for being here and sharing so generously. I know stories like yours are helping other people know that they're not alone in thinking differently and that they can follow their whimsy too. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, this has been amazing.
It's time for your ADHD Alchemy Lab Kit. Three ideas from this episode that you can start using today. First up, we have the advice audit. So, for the next week, I would love for you to just notice when someone gives you advice and notice whether the advice is generic or if it's actually based on and tailored to you. If it's generic, you are allowed to ignore it without guilt because it's likely that it does not take into account the kind of mind that you have. And by the way, I would even say it's okay to ignore advice that is tailored for you if it does not hit home for you, or if it violates something that you feel is really important, your integrity, your value system, or something else that makes deep and resonant sense for you. Experiment number two, ask for feedback instead of fixes. So the next time you're stuck and if it's a stuck situation that merits bringing someone else into the picture, not all of them do, but if it does, and you feel like asking that person, what should I do? Instead, ask, can you reflect back to me what you hear me saying? And then spill your problem, spill your thoughts about it, and ask them to reflect it back. And see what changes when someone responds to you instead of a curated, masked version of you. And also notice what hits home about that message, what hits home about that reflection. Experiment number three, build a brain disclaimer. So here's where I want you to add one sentence of clarity somewhere that it really helps. Maybe it's an email footer or a work conversation or a relationship check-in. It could be something like, here's how my brain works best. And notice how much confusion disappears when expectations are named upfront. That's your ADHD Alchemy Lab Kit for today. I hope you will pick one of these experiments and let me know how it goes.
Thanks for listening to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast. If you're nodding along and thinking, oh yeah, that's me, then please subscribe and share this episode with another woman who gets it. Your reviews help more women discover they're not failing. They're just wired differently. And that is a good thing, despite the challenges. Plus, I want to hear your story. Apply to be a guest at myadhdalchemy.com and join my free community at fitology.com/community. Those links will be in the show notes. Together, we can rewrite the ADHD shame story into one of strength. I'll see you next time.